Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a bit of an unusual episode of The Breakdown, because we're broadcasting in a way that we not normally would, which is why there's no video to go along with tonight's show. But we are back to run down our breakdown of the top stories in Alberta politics over the last week, and maybe a little bit of change, and there has been no shortage of things that we've got to talk about. At the very top of the list, though, it would be irresponsible not to acknowledge that Friday was the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. And as is to be expected, we saw a lot of politicians coming out and making extremely performative statements, celebrating, air quotes, Orange Shirt Day while wearing white collared shirts and no orange to be seen. And there was a lot of confusion over how people should recognize and evaluate the day for truth, National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. And it's a very complex issue. As the middle-aged white guy who's hosting the podcast, though, I'm certainly not going to try to speak for anybody other than this middle-aged white guy. And what all that I have to say about it is, if you're trying to figure out how to approach the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation as a settler, the best place to start is probably by listening. The next best place to start is probably by just not being racist. It sounds like a pretty low bar to hit, but unfortunately, it's still a bar that we desperately, desperately need to hit. Moving on from there, obviously one of the big conversation topics over the last week, and I got to say, I don't know if I'm impressed or disappointed with the Twitterverse at large, because nobody that I saw, at least, made any jokes about the breakdown that occurred on the breakdown last week. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on that I can't talk about right now for a whole laundry list of reasons, but I wanted to make sure that the next thing that I acknowledged on the show was a big thank you to everybody who has been offering all kinds of support. I never expected the GoFundMe to get the kind of traction that it has already. I'm sure lots of people have already seen the commentary that it's no secret. Legal defenses are not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. So to everybody who has continued to support the breakdown through the GoFundMe, to everybody who's continuing to support through Patreon, and believe you me, I get that there's a lot of people who simply do not have the financial means to support the legal fund right now. A lot of those people have been just doing their best to make sure people are aware of the situation and the fact that the GoFundMe exists. And that means the absolute world to me. So I just wanted to take a second to say thank you to everybody who has offered all of the different kinds of support that they have been offering over the last week. It has meant more than I can say. I also want to reassure everybody that once money starts to go out of that fund, it will be carefully and clearly documented. There won't be any confusion about where the money's going, what it's being used for. Obviously, some things might not be able to be fully detailed just because ongoing legal stuffs, but they will be by the time that things are done, because the very, very last thing that any of us who are involved in the breakdown want to see happen is somebody like, I don't know, CTV have to do a news story trying to sort out what happened with the GoFundMe, like they just did with Danielle Smith. We have been beating on the drum of Danielle Smith's GoFundMe and how that money was spent for the better part of 4 months now. For those of you that aren't familiar, about a year and a half ago, Danielle Smith launched a GoFundMe, and it had two stated purposes. One of them was to sue the government to make sure that there were no health restrictions put in place until everybody had access to whatever type of vaccine that they wanted. And the other one was to sue the government to say, hey, if doctors want to cheat with horse paste and, I don't know, unicorn farts, they should be allowed to do that. Doesn't matter what the evidence is. Doctors should be able to do whatever doctors want. And then nothing happened. And then more nothing happened. And still more nothing happened. And a few months ago, we got sent a DM saying, hey, do you know what's going on with this thing? And we took a look. We're like, wow, we don't know what's going on with this thing. And we've been around for the last few months. And we were able to figure out that some money might have maybe been donated to the JCCF. Danielle Smith initially on her GoFundMe said the $10,000 had gone towards legal funds. But the very next, just a couple of days later, she said that it was actually $30,000. She said on Jesperson had gone to lawyers and legal fees. There's been a lot of inconsistent information. And while CTV did run a story this week, we're still left with a lot of inconsistent information, unfortunately. So in total, the GoFundMe raised $101,425. And what CTV was told was that about $90,000 is in the process of being donated to the JCCF. Now, this was coming from one of the lawyers, Derek Frome, who was working with the law agency that put together the air quotes lawsuit for Smith. Also, coincidentally, the same law firm that wrote the Free Alberta Strategy and came up with the idea for the Alberta Sovereignty Act. I'm sure that's just a tremendous coincidence, though. Now, what's weird about that is he said that $10,000 was collected by his firm, but on Jesperson Smith that $30,000 was collected to go towards the lawyers. Now, on Tuesday earlier this week, they said that $13,000, one-third of the money, was spent on legal fees, $3,000 went to GoFundMe fees, and another $60,000 has been donated to the JCCF. Now, they also said that, yeah, she's keeping that retainer fee, that retainer piece. It's $25,000, which is on par with what we had heard as well. So she's keeping a rainy day legal fund of $25,000. But apparently, somehow, all of those numbers add up into some sort of metamath way that allow her to still be donating $90,000 to the JCCF. If you can make that math work, I don't know. Do what you will with it. But it still leaves the big ugly question. And this is probably one of the most important big ugly questions that needs to be answered. Danielle Smith has talked a lot about how one of her big strengths is finding loopholes and finding ways around systems so that she can still get what she wants. If the CTV news story is correct, if that's the actual reality, that she's going to be donating $90,000 in magic math money to the JCCF, it's really important to remember the JCCF is a registered charity. So presumably, Danielle Smith, once she donates that $90,000, will be in receipt of a $90,000 charitable donation receipt that she can then use towards her taxes. So the question then becomes, is Danielle getting that tax receipt? Is she going to be claiming it on her income tax? Because if it does, let's take a second and remember that we're talking about a legal fund that was established for a lawsuit that never, ever happened. There was no accountability for how the money was spent. There was no indication for the fact that it was going to be pivoted from as hard as she did, because she went from we're going to sue to allow doctors and vaccines to, and now we're going to give all the money to the JCCF. But at the end of the day, she collected over $100,000 in money from people who thought they were donating to a specific cause. And she's turning that money around and donating it and getting a massive, massive tax receipt, a massive, massive tax break out of the deal. She still stands to benefit personally. And on that note, to just throw it back to the GoFundMe for the legal fees for the breakdown, what we said, and I stand by this, is that if there is any money left over in the GoFundMe after this whole debacle is done debacling, then we will be donating the money to harm reduction outreach groups and as well women's shelters. I want to be very, very clear. If there is any money that's left over and we are able to donate, any donations will be clearly documented, but they'll be given anonymously. Because I can't think of anything more gross, and it's the last thing that I want to do with incredibly generous support that people have offered so far. The last thing that I want to do is use that support to my own advantage. I have no illusions that some of the people who donated money to the GoFundMe for the breakdown are doing so, and they're experiencing some hardship because of it, as is really the only way that I can say it. There's been a couple of donations that I've tried to give back and people have said no. And I can't think of anything more gross than having people offer that kind of support and pivoting it around to being something of personal gain. So there's the update on the Smith story, as well as the promise and commitment on a recorded podcast that anybody can refer to, because accountability is important. Moving on from there, the next big story of the week has to do with the not really sovereignty act getting a not really test run, because Tyler Shandro, the justice minister, who's facing his own legal problems, he's got hearings pending with the Law Society for three different infractions, let's say, potential infractions, alleged infractions. I'm getting better at my legalese, stemming back from, among other things, just showing up in a physician's driveway and yelling at him. It was a little bit unbecoming of a lawyer, apparently. So he stood up this week and he said, hey, you know what? The feds, they're trying to tell the RCMP that if people have guns that are listed as being some of the 1,500 guns that have now been banned in Canada, the feds are saying they should take the guns. I don't want them to take the guns. I'm going to tell the RCMP, hey, you don't you listen to those feds, okay? And it was a lot of bluster. It was really a big tempest in a teapot, because at the end of the day, Mr. Shandro is actually, to his credit, I said in almost disbelief, he's actually following the mechanisms that already exist for a provincial government to say, hey, we don't think this is how the RCMP should be tasked with doing time. He said that he's going to be filing some complaints. He said that he has requested that this not be a priority. Now, obviously, anybody who's familiar with the RCMP or policing knows there's no RCMP officer who's going to say, hey, I've got this list of guns I'm supposed to collect. I hear there's a robbery two doors down. I'm going to stick with collecting the guns. Obviously, that's not a thing that any police officer is going to do. So this would be something that was happening when presumably the police officers had not much else to do. But Shandra has come out and he has said that he does not want any RCP members collecting these guns. Now, Mr. Shandra has also said some very hyperbolic things. He compared the collection of these now illegal firearms, and that's a whole different debate. We could probably do a whole show on whether or not guns on that list should be on the list, and the term assault weapon, like, we could probably do two or three shows on that. But what Mr. Shandro said this week is Alberta has been told that the federal government will use the RCMP to confiscate firearms, as they did during the 2013 floods. Now, there's a lot to unpack right there. Because in the 2013 floods, there were a whole lot of guns in the areas that were evacuated. And an idiot could have gone in there and decided that they were going to expand their own gun collection because there were no people in any of the houses. Now, there were some very real concerns about whether or not those firearms were all returned, how they were returned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying the RCMP did a bang-up job on that one. But to compare the confiscation of weapons that the federal government has decided are illegal with the securing of weapons during a natural disaster, it's actually incredibly on brand for Mr. Shandro. He goes on to say, when the RCMP seized over 600 firearms during the notorious High River gun grab, actions taken today will seek to prevent history from repeating itself. Further options are being explored and all options are on the table. But they go through and they detail all of the things that they're doing. And it really just boils down to, Mr. Shandro has politely asked the RCMP, please don't do what the feds have told you to do in regards to enforcing the laws. And if you do have to do that because, you know, they're laws and stuff, then we're going to file an appeal to the federal government to maybe not. It's going to be really, really interesting to watch that unfold. But perhaps one of the most interesting things about that whole debacle is, once again, Tyler Shandro showed his hand in regards to where he feels people should be getting reliable information from when he retweeted Rebel News. Rebel News covered the story. And I know that you guys don't have video tonight, so you can't see the air quotes that I'm wielding, but trust me, they're out there. Rebel News covered the story with a tweet saying, Alberta is telling its RCMP to ignore Trudeau's gun ban. Solicitor General Tyler Shandro says, we will not tolerate taking officers off the street in order to confiscate the property of law-abiding firearms. And then this is the kicker. There's a website. So there's always a website. Tell Trudeau, handsoffourguns.ca. And this was retweeted with the web link by the Minister of Justice, Tyler Shandro. It's almost impossible to really overstate just how ridiculous the relationship is with the current UCP provincial government and the rebel media. It was Nathan Cooper, Speaker of the House, who opened the back door for the rebel to be accredited in the legislature. And now we have Tyler Shandro not only signal boosting the rebel, but he's also advertising their new, assumably, data collection, at the very least, probably donations to websites, from his official ministerial Twitter account. It seems like Tyler Shandro hasn't learned a single thing since his whole experience of governance via Twitter when he was the health minister. Speaking of health, moving on to our next story from there, the doctors in Alberta have reached a contract. There's a new agreement between the government and the Alberta Medical Association, and there are some small raises that exist for physicians. Now, all of this comes on the backdrop of the fact that Alberta is hemorrhaging physicians. Not only are they leaving the province, but more and more healthcare workers are experiencing serious levels of burnout. They're not able to maintain the same capacity that they used to because it's been 3 years of pandemic, and especially physicians war against them by the government. Well, the good news is that there was a contract that was agreed upon. Basically, the way that it boils down is there's a bunch of targeted investments where the government is putting specific money towards different areas of physicians' practice. But what doctors are getting out of the deal is a 1% rate increase in each of the first 3 years. They're getting a 1% recognition lump sum in 2023. And then there's a couple of other little tweaky things. But it's, again, when we take a look at what the current rate of inflation is, just a couple of weeks ago, we were well above 7% inflation. A 1% increase for physicians who have been working their damnedest to tread water during 3 years of pandemic and 3.5 years, almost four now, of a government waging warfare on them. 1% doesn't even keep up with the cost of living. So while the government is taking a victory lap on this, it's really not the greatest news. And there's a lot of physicians who are very unhappy with it. Moving on from there, the UCP. A little while ago, we got our hands on a bunch of the proposed UCP policy resolutions that they were going to be debating at their upcoming policy convention. Well, they did a voting process by which they established which policies they should be looking at and when, and which policies should be brought to the convention floor. That actually came out just a couple of days ago. We're going to run through a couple of them because while some of the really, really horrifying ones apparently ended up on the cutting room floor, there's a bunch of horrifying ones that didn't. There's a bunch of horrifying ones that are going to be debated. We're going to start from the beginning and work our way up from there. There's resolution number 3, which says that any members of the UCP are not to be reprimanded for exercising their freedom of expression unless such expression constitutes an offense under the criminal code or other legislative act. Now, let's just turn back the clocks a little bit, since everything's Danielle Smith these days. If we go back to the Lake of Fire, where a Wild Rose candidate made some appalling statements about the LGBTQ2S community. There's no shortage of examples that we can look at where somebody has said something, an elected official has said something, and it has been not only not representative of the party of the whole, but it has been deeply, deeply offensive and hurtful to huge swaths of Albertans. And there have been, on occasion, consequences for that. We saw just in the last week, the Danielle Smith campaign dismissed an employee because of things that he had said, allegedly, that were allegedly racist. He was fired. Now, this policy here says, unless that person has done something that meets the standard of being a hate crime, there should be no consequences. They shouldn't be removed working groups. They shouldn't be removed from advisory positions. They shouldn't be removed as contractors if they're party members. There should be no consequences for saying anything as long as it doesn't meet the grounds of hate speech. Resolution number five, double down on the idea that, and it's unbelievable that this comes on the heels of the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, because this policy reads, the UCP need to halt the practice of any student being taught that by reason of their ethnic heritage, they are privileged, they are inherently racist, or they bear historic guilt due to said ethnic heritage, or that all of society is a racist system. Further, any differential treatment practiced by any educator due to said ethnic heritage will be halted. Instruction of these concepts will not take place, whether it is advanced under the title of so-called critical race theory, intersectionality, anti-racism, diversity and inclusion, or some other name. This policy is coming out after the country of Canada was supposed to take a day to step back to recognize the fact that Canada as a nation is built on racism. Canada as a nation has structures that continue to perpetuate racism. This isn't up for debate. This is historical reality. This is present day reality. But according to Edmonton West Hende, none of that should be talked about anymore. We should just move on. Resolution number eight, the solar and wind restriction made it through as well. So resolution number eight says we should restrict solar and wind energy or municipal development on highly productive irrigated land, such as that being used for the agri-food corridor in southern Alberta, keeping solar panels to wind farms and lower grade dry land areas. So if you're a farmer and you decide that you want to put up a bunch of solar panels on your land that you've owned maybe for generations, under this policy, you're not allowed to do that if it's considered to be agricultural land. It's absolutely bizarre that this is a policy that gets put forward to be debated at the conference from the party that's all about personal freedom, from the party that's all about, we need to get the feds. We need to stop the feds from telling us what we can do with our land, with our property. But we're just going to tell you that you can't do solar and wind depending on where you live. Resolution number nine, United Conservative Party believes that the government of Alberta should protect Albertans' right to choose what is best for their own bodies. Now, this butts up against stated policies and resolutions that talk about conscience rights, that talk about the rights of healthcare workers, of physicians, to say, ah, oh, you know what, you're one of those trans folks. I don't believe in that. I'm not going to treat you. But here we have a policy that says Albertans need to be able to choose what's best for their own bodies. Now, presumably, one could also use this same policy to talk about things like supervised consumption sites, to talk about safe supply. But we all know that this policy is really talking about vaccines. It's really talking about alternative treatment modalities, like the kind of things that Danielle Smith advocated for with her lawsuit that went nowhere. On a similar line, Resolution 16 believes that the United Conservative Party believes that the government of Alberta should protect an individual's right for their own healthcare choices and ensure individuals are not discriminated against for their personal healthcare choices. So if a trans person wants to explore what kind of options are available for them medically in dealing with the dissonance that they experience just by nature of being trans, this policy presumably would support it. But again, we know that's not what this policy is about. This policy is about vaccination. And if you choose to work in a setting where you're working with vulnerable people, like in healthcare, there shouldn't be any consequences if you decide that you're going to disregard all of the established science, all of the established safety protocols, and you should be able to just do whatever you want. Consequences be damned, or rather non-existent. Resolution 18, again, doubles down on the anti-trans sentiment This is the one that talks about upholding the rights of parents and caregivers as to not require them to affirm or socially condition a child in a gender identity that is incongruent with the child's birth sex. They're making it very, very clear where they feel on trans issues. But we asked this a couple of weeks ago when we first got these policies. Hey, can anybody point us to where in any legal framework that exists in Alberta or Canada right now, parents are being forced to affirm or acknowledge a child's gender identity that is incongruent with their birth sex? We still haven't found that law. So this is another policy that's about nothing more than making it clear, oh, we're not fans of those trans folks. They double down on it again with Resolution 17, where they talk about how they need to ensure that parents, legal guardians, caregivers have the right and responsibility to oversee the healthcare and education of their own system, or their own children, sorry, including but not limited to the cultural, linguistic, religious, spiritual, and moral upbringing and heritage of their children. Here's the problem with absolutes, and this is one of the things that drives me personally nuts about the way that the UCP approach these policies. Everything's binary. Everything's black and white. All the parents are always right, period. Well, the reality is, no, they're not. If that was true, we wouldn't have need of organizations like Child and Protective Services. If that was true, we wouldn't need child pornography laws. But the reality is, there's some god-awful parents out there. And by simply painting it as all parents are always right, always, because that's what feels better to me, we're doing a disservice not only to the parents who perhaps need some help in getting some parenting skills, but more importantly, we're doing a tremendous disservice to those kids. One of the other things that the UCP wants to do is they want to change campaign finance laws. They want to amend both the Election Finances and Contributions Disclosure Act and Municipal Authority Act to restrict third-party advertising funding to the rules for people running for provincial office and introduce rules for third-party advertising funding for people running for municipal offices. They want to get rid of the third-party advertising in municipal and provincial. They want to make it more opaque. Those are sort of the big policies that we went through. Now, there's been several that have been pointed out on Twitter as well that they're not so great. There's some problems going on with them too. But perhaps the biggest problem with all of these policy resolutions is the cost for any UCP member to attend to vote on these policies. Last we checked, it was almost $400 for a UCP member to attend the policy convention to debate whether or not these policies are good and reflective of what that party wants to be. That is incredibly cost prohibitive for the vast majority of Albertans. And what it does is it ensures that only the people who have huge stacks of cash are able to make these decisions. Moving on to the news, because that's a lot of negativity for a relatively short period of time. There was a really good story that came out of the Supreme Court of Canada. And yet again, this is another example of why the Alberta Sovereignty Act is such a train wreck. Because the Supreme Court of Canada knocked down an appeal. They refused to hear an appeal of a regulatory decision that had to do with the grassy mines. So you may remember a little while back, there's a lot of debate around coal mining in the southern part of Alberta in the Rocky Mountains. There was a regulatory decision that said, yeah, you know what? The reality is the economic gain, totally not worth the environmental devastation. So we're not going to approve of this. Well, some of the people involved said, well, we're going to appeal that. And some of the other people said, we're just going to say we're going to appeal it. And then some other folks said, the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to hear your appeal. It's really important to remember, while there are certainly some people who are going to be unhappy about this decision because they're not going to make the mad stacks of cash that they wanted to, the Supreme Court provides protections that are critical. And one of the dangers that the United Conservative Party is currently looking at with their leadership race, which, by the way, Thursday night, all hell breaks loose, is that they're courting a piece of legislation that may or may not, we don't know, they say it will, allow them to disregard anything that the feds say, anything that the Supreme Court says. They're just going to say this thing is unconstitutional, regardless of what all of the other bodies that exist and have existed for a very long time to determine that. We're gonna let MLAs make the decision about what's constitutional or not. It's because of those constitutional mechanisms that the grassy slopes are safer today than they were before. Moving on from there, and then we're going to have Deirdre tap in, and she's probably going to tell me how I got a bunch of things wrong, which is good because I do that, and talk about some federal stuff as well. But one of the big announcements that came out is that there's new ambulances. There's five new ambulances in Calgary. There's five new ambulances in Edmonton. The provincial government put forward funding to not only buy the trucks, but to create positions for those trucks to work. Sounds very exciting. But according to HSAA, the Health Science Association of Alberta, which is the union that represents paramedics, it's a great step in the right direction. But the reality is, at the start of that same week, when those ambulances were scheduled to launch, there were more than 500 paramedic shifts across the province of Alberta that were unstaffed. There simply weren't enough paramedics to staff the existing trucks, let alone five new trucks in Calgary, five new trucks in Edmonton. And there's no discernible plan that's been announced by the provincial government to address that staff shortage or to address the conditions that are causing paramedics to burn out at the rates that they're burning out. So it's great that there's 10 new trucks. They're just hopefully have 10 really nice parking spots, because if they can't fill those 500 spots at the end of, or at the beginning of the week, that's a boatload of trucks that are going to need parking spots. Two more pieces, and then we're bringing Deirdre in. The next piece that we want to talk about has to do with Brian Jean. So Brian Jean announced, apropos of nothing, I'm sure, that he was advocating for anti-SLAPP legislation. For those of you who aren't familiar, a SLAPP lawsuit is a lawsuit that is initiated not necessarily with the goal of winning, not necessarily with the goal of obtaining any kind of damages. It's initiated only to intimidate and to scare people away from speaking their minds about public issues. Now, there's a lot of problems with SLAPP lawsuits in Alberta because currently there's no rules against them. If you have $100 and some free time, you can write up a lawsuit against literally anyone and say, I'd like to sue them for XYZ. And there's no laws on the books in Alberta that say, well, it should probably have some merit before we go burdening the court systems with this sort of thing. Brian Jean came out earlier this week and he said that he supports anti-SLAPP legislation. And there's a lot of conversation that's going on right now with things that are happening in, I'll say, that have a lot of people talking about SLAPP lawsuits and how SLAPP lawsuits are actually counterproductive to the democratic discourse. And they're counterproductive to actually ensuring that laws and justice actually happens. Hopefully, Mr. Jean, regardless of the outcome of the leadership race, will continue that passionate advocacy, because he is a sitting MLA. He does have the ability to put forward a private member's bill that argues for the need for that kind of legislation. We'll be waiting and seeing. It's been a while since we've done our last little segment here, and we're going to do it because we're going to have some fun. Going back to our tweet of the week. For those of you that follow The Breakdown on Twitter, you know every once in a while we do a tweet of the day, we do a tweet of the night. When we find something really impressive, though, we like to do a tweet of the week. This week's tweet of the week goes to none other hockey legend, Theo Fleury. Theo Fleury, who's currently starting a new organization to, advance conspiracy theories or something. I'm a little fuzzy on what the details are. I could be wrong about that. But it seems like him and ex-figure skater, Jamie Sale, the lay, I could be getting the name wrong. They're starting a new organization. They're calling it Fire and Ice because he was a flame and she was a figure skater. And they're going to talk about conspiracies and truth and justice and how U.S. laws should apply to Canadian citizens or something. Like I said, I'm really fuzzy on it. But Theo Fleury tweeted out, the biggest spreaders of misinformation are the ones who are spreading misinformation. So you can take those words to the bank. With that said, I want to welcome into the fray Deirdre Mitchell McLean. I didn't say Smith.
No. How's it going, Deirdre? It's going well, thanks. I forgot about that.
I hold myself accountable to every single misstep, rest assured.
It's been quite a busy week. Obviously, we're coming to the end of that UCP leadership. And, I realized that it's pretty much been nonstop since May 18th.
Yep.
And if Danielle Smith were to win the leadership, it will be nonstop until April of 2023.
If we're lucky. Yeah. No, if we're unlucky. Because there's some rumors that are going on. I don't know if you've heard these rumors, but I've heard these rumors from a couple of places. And I got to be clear, they're rumors. But there's a lot of little murmurs going on. And it blows my mind. I can't understand this decision. But there's so many things going on Alberta politics right now that I don't understand. There's talk of a snap.
Yeah. I'm honestly not sure. Because as many people have suggested privately that, they would not support Danielle Smith, they have to act on it. and even a snap election, I don't, like, there's no way that would be good for them. Why would they do that?
I mean, the way that I look at it is if they did a snap election, because I see a lot of parallels between the Smith campaign and the Trump campaign. Right. And you almost got the sense, some people got the sense watching Donald Trump and his descent down the golden escalator, that this was very much a, I don't like that joke that you made about me at the press gallery dinner, Mr. President. So I'm going to run for office and that'll show you. And mm-hmm. As his campaign went on, it kind of seemed like it was, oh shit, I might win. And then he did. And then he didn't really know what to do with himself. He clearly still doesn't know what to do with himself. But it almost seems like this is Danielle Smith's way of going, when I threw my hat into the ring, I didn't really think I was going to win. And oh God, I mean, and if I do, I'd better call a snap to get away out of this.
that would just be a lovely thought. It...
But it would be on brand, right?
It would be on brand for her to be that disillusioned by what's going on in the province to think that the UCP might not lose. That's what I would say that would be on brand with.
Okay. here's my next question for you, Deirdre. If Danielle Smith wins, mm-hmm. which party is she going to cross to? Mm.
Oh yeah, she's not crossing. What you're going to have is a whole bunch of supporters who are like, what the hell? Like, oh, but I don't know. I read a great article by Jason Markusoff and I think Elise. Oh, help me out. Yeah. They did a tour in rural Alberta. The two ridings that have the highest UCP membership, which is Central Alberta and South in Cardston Siksika. And so they went and talked to some people, find out who they were voting for and why. And I was impressed because I had not expected to see Danielle Smith bringing in full community halls because of the floor crossing. Right. I had expected that there were too many people that were just, no, like, I will not support that person because of what she did in 2014. And then it seemed like that was not an issue for anyone.
Well, so, anger makes for short memories.
Yeah. But when Marcus Soff and Von Scheele were talking to people, they were kind of getting a similar response that there's still a lot of people who will not support Smith. And so I started to kind of, I was chatting with somebody about this, and I said, you know, wouldn't it be just like amazing if, as everyone's thinking, Danielle Smith has got this, but like someone in the background, Brian Jean even, has actually been amassing the support and actually turns out to win. Like, that would be a shock. Brian Jean winning would be an absolute shock.
Well, especially given today's revelations that when he's publishing his "please drop off your votes here," some of those addresses don't exist in those cities. I mean, that would be, there's some obstacles, I think, that Team Jean needs to maybe overcome before they get to victory. Mm. Do you have a federal story for us this week?
I do have a federal story. I have because again, this ties into like so much in Alberta. I understand what's going on federally, party-wise, much better now that I've watched the UCP do it. Now I understand what's going on, yeah, with the CPC. So the story that came out this week, of course, was that Jeremy McKenzie, founder of Diagonalon, and, you know, he's a right-wing, I don't know, figure in Canada, and he was having a conversation, I believe it was like on their podcast, and he was talking about how, you know, that they should rape Pierre Poilievre's wife because they could, just because they could, just to show power, something like that. And it was just like astounding that anyone would have this conversation publicly, let alone privately, but also publicly. And so, you know, Poilievre went off the wall on that, of course. And, you know, there were people turning around saying, we told you about this guy. And when you look back on how many people tried to say, you know, this isn't someone that you should be proud of standing with. And, you know, that's when he turned around and called people woke and cancel culture mobs and stuff. But the thing is, I actually don't, like, I don't really appreciate the whole, oh, the person showed up at your rally and therefore, you know, you must be giving them some support, because that's not how those work. Unless you want to go back to Stephen Harper era, where they were literally vetting anyone that was allowed in the room, and it was only hardcore Stephen Harper supporters that were allowed in the room, and people that, you know, were members, they were like, that was a thing. Stephen Harper vetted the people at his rallies. Now granted, he didn't have that happening, but no one appreciated that. Those rallies were closed to the public. So, you know, unless we want to go back to something like that. But I think that you know, we should be careful about, you know, saying something like, obviously you support this person who showed up and asked for a picture with you. They're politicians. That's what they do. They will shake your hand. They'll have a conversation. And if you ask for a photo with them, they'll take one.
Well, we saw that even just, like, I think it was 2 years ago, when a certain dark, angry universe version of Caillou took a picture with Rachel Notley. And it seems pretty clear. I mean, it's an assumption, but it seems pretty clear that Rachel Notley is, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, probably not a subscriber to that particular person's media outlet. Yeah. And so I think that there's, but, you know, I don't think that if there's any room for ambiguity, I don't think anybody should be hoisted by their own petard for taking a picture with Mr. Diagonalon. But I do think that once everybody in the universe goes, hey, do you know who that guy is? Right. There might be an opportunity and maybe even some responsibility to say, whoa, damn, I didn't know that. I'm not cool with that.
Yeah. And that was the thing, right? It wasn't even that Mackenzie was the one, like the people that were promoting it was his campaign.
Yeah.
Right? Coming out of his campaign. That's a campaign screw up that is easily wrecked. Like you can fix that. But so that is a whole kind of side of this. But, you know, I think it really kind of put into perspective, and Kenny watched this too. I found a post that I'd written in 2018 that was basically saying that the UCP that Kenny had created is very likely going to be his downfall. And so I was like, oh, that looks interesting. So I read it and I was like, okay. I mean, it's the same thing. When you're courting those people that are on the more extreme ends of whatever spectrum you want to use, when you're doing that, and it might make you feel like, okay, they're listening to me, they're paying me attention, but it's actually the opposite. Those people are looking at these politicians saying, all right, I've got you, you're going to do what I want. And the second that you don't, they turn. And I mean, it has, like, this is exactly what Polyev is going to run into as well. And for some reason, I don't understand how they haven't picked up on this yet.
Well, it's stunning. I mean, I've said it in a few places. Watching Jason Kenney realize what was happening in his universe was exactly like watching the 6-year-old kid who's playing with matches in the corner of the living room, and all of a sudden they look up and realize with horror that they've lit the drapes on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And mom and dad are probably going to be a little bit pissed about this situation. It's the same thing over and over again, where we see these extreme politicians allow for extreme views because that's what's going to get them the votes in the leadership race. That's what's going to get them the most donations. And then they have this shocked moment of epiphany. This is why I personally think the CPC leadership is just like a revolving door on jet engines, because they court the most extreme views, and then they can't carry those extreme views because that's like 15% of the country or the province.
Yeah,
and they want to win elections, so they try to pivot, and then all of the extreme views go, well, I like this guy now because he's saying what I like to hear.
What I want to hear. And that's like that is the situation that maybe we have always been in. I mean, you know, how many times have we all said Prentice was right? Alberta did need to look in the mirror. We've all said it.
The question then becomes, like, you take a look at the Conservative Party in Alberta in its various different incarnations. And they have had this, especially since the dynasty was upset, they have had this revolving door problem. But when you look at the other side of the spectrum, Rachel Notley's been running the show for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't seem to have, I mean, Lord knows, as we've covered in various different episodes, the NDP have their own bumps too. But they don't seem to lean into, if anything, the NDP seems to be leaning away from the extremes and trying to move towards the center as subtly as they possibly can.
Yeah.
But she's managed to maintain her leadership for, God, I think we're over a decade now. Whereas the UCP, it seems to be, you know, the paper cup theory, use once, throw away.
But, you know, I think that's, and I'll go back to looking at the Conservative Party of Canada. The unification process is a veneer. Right? It's not real. There are not, you know, PCs and former Canadian Alliance and reformers all sitting at the table. That's not how, like, it's an engineered takeover. However, what Harper had, and even I think what Kenny would have had he not had a pandemic, I think he would have kept the loyalty that the initial caucus showed Harper when he finally won government. But what we've seen is that the loyalty, it gets less and less and less with each leader. And like, we're talking a party that went from the great unifier of Harper through Andrew Scheer, through Aaron O'Toole. Now they've got Polyev. And you've got Kenny, who just like, and Alberta looks like it just might skip those two and just go straight to the, just go straight to the nut job. Like, that's what they're doing. And I don't think, and it's too fast. I mean, it might work for the CPC. They still have three more years that they can hold on to this. But I mean, it's a drastic change.
Well, I think, like, I take a look, the most telling moment in federal politics, and again, like, I typically don't follow federal politics very much because I know you do that. but the most telling moment in federal politics for me recently was when Garnett stood up and did his little soliloquy to the sort of tune of Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. And watching Michelle Rempel Garner in the background was like, when you've lost her with theatrics, when you've lost her with hyperbole, oh man, is that telling.
Yeah, like, what happened to you there? And I mean, like, I thought that it was like, what is it, Genui? Is that how you say his last name?
You know what? That's a rabbit hole I'm not going to fall into. Sometimes I just know I'm not going to get that right. So I'm just going to say Garnett G.
Yeah. Okay. So when he, like, when I watched it, and I'm actually kind of bad for what you like putting something on, and I tend to listen to it rather than watch. And probably because it's easier for me. Like, too many times you're watching some of these and you notice things like their facial expressions, you know, their hands and stuff. And I find them very distracting. Like, I just want to hear, what are you saying? And I always find the most ridiculous things when I do watch. So I was just listening to him. And when I was just listening to it, I thought, okay, you know, like, this is what it is. It's political theater. It's a little over the top. Yes. But I thought it was creative. I thought it got its point across, and I actually didn't hate it. Until I saw it. When I saw it, I hated it. But
well, I mean,
as far as theater goes, and you know what I did? Just for fun, I went through some Hansard from 1880, I think it was. Just to check.
I don't think Bohemian Rhapsody was out then. I could be wrong.
It wasn't, but I want to check and see, like, was it as theatrical? And let me tell you, it was theatrical, but the writing was so much better. Amazing to read.
Well, I think that even in going back into Alberta Hansard as well, there's plenty of clever, intelligent, like, I would argue that there was a point in time where some of the best political satirists were actually inside of the governing bodies. But it seems like, because we're certain parties, almost all of them, I'll say, are really going out of their way to pander to their base in the most basic way possible, the humor has fallen to the point of effectively political fart jokes. And it's really, you know, as somebody who tries to write clever jokes from time to time, it's just like, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah. So I used to watch it. I used to watch Question Period every day. And then I would do an A.B. Ledge Burn kind of vote, and, you know, just taking something that each of the party members had said. But I could only do that for one session. When it came on again in the fall and I tried to watch it, I couldn't. Like, it didn't seem like they were poking fun. It seemed like they were actually trying to attack one another. And it,
yeah,
really stopped. It's funny.
It's gone from making fun of policy to just like ad hominem attacks all day long, and they never answer the question that they're actually asked. Like, I'm super curious to see, A, who's going to be the proxy premier, which is my new term, when Smith wins on Thursday. I'm super curious to see who's going to be the voice in the legislature. And I think it's going to be we're if we thought it was bad before, the reality is I think that when you take a look at all of the different children in the room, we've got Chandro showing up in people's driveways. We've got Madhu calling the chief of police in Edmonton. As much as it galls me to say it, given the cast of characters, there's a part of me that kind of goes, oh my God, was Kenny almost a moderating influence on some of these people? And if we have the absent premier sitting in the legislature for the next session, and the kids, I mean, who is Smith going to pick to be the adult in the room when almost all of the ministers that are currently in cabinet have said, that woman's nuts?
Yeah.
The bench strength is so weak that Chandro is currently the Minister of Justice. And who are they going to pull to be the deputy premier, the acting premier? I think it's just going to get more. Like, I looked at the Kenny leadership review and I was like, it's going to get more nuts. Mm-hmm. And now I've just approached these things with like, going to the Batman, the original Michael Keaton Batman. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. Because I think things are going to get really nuts before they get anywhere close to sane.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's no way. And I cannot imagine that, you know, I think that Kenny really did think he was going to try and run a tight ship. Like, I think that was his goal. He couldn't do it, but I think it was a goal, right? I mean, I do honestly believe that he thought that he would be able to just wave his hand and raise decorum in the ledge, right? That was something that he was like, we're absolutely going to do this. It didn't happen.
Well, I think part of the problem might have been that the hand that he waved was holding earplugs at the time.
Right. it's not that he had no part in this, but he just, and also that's why, right? Like, you know, if Kenny's going to be doing that, why would anyone else behave? They honestly, yeah. So who could be the moderating influence? Like, I have no idea who Smith could go to, but you might see, like, you might even see someone like Angela Pitt, right? She's been the deputy speaker. I think that she would like to, you know, have that role. Todd Lowen, I don't mind the guy as a speaker, but he doesn't strike me as someone who is going to be a moderating influence on the rest of the team. He seems like someone that people would just ignore, I think, generally.
I'm going to ask you for one more prediction before we open it up to the floor. Well, two more predictions before we open it up to the floor. Final answer. And we're going to be doing a live on Thursday post-debacle. Once the fire has started falling from the sky instead of up from the lake. See what I did there? So we're going to be doing that Thursday night. But prior to Thursday, first question, Deirdre, who is the new leader of the United Conservative Party?
Okay, I really think that it's Danielle Smith, but suddenly I'm hedging my bets a little bit and saying, what if Brian Jean is coming up the middle? I don't know for sure. It's just something that I started to consider today. So it's very new. But I think Smith has it, but I'm honestly not that positive anymore.
Okay, second question. How long, if she does, if Smith does win, how long till she completely rearranges cabinet?
Oh,
that's do you think she keeps any of the current cabinet ministers?
The only way that, I think immediately she does a cabinet shuffle. If she keeps any of the current ministers, it's because they've had a conversation. She has said, I need your support in this. And they have said yes.
Okay, so like two?
Yeah. Oh, there's a huge shuffle. She has to have an entire cabinet that supports her.
I'm curious where Chandra lands. That's the one that I want to see. What's he going to break next?
I have no idea. I mean, he was in tears when Jason Kenney resigned. So that, like, I don't know. I don't know if he's a good little soldier or if he was a good Kenny soldier.
It's going to be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. Why don't we open it up to the floor and we'll do the regular preamble here. If anybody has anything that they want to add to the conversation, if you've heard something that you think either myself or Deirdre got catastrophically wrong, then absolutely please click on the little mic button on the bottom left-hand corner of the thing and weigh in. I can already see there's some very, very smart people in the audience tonight. So I would love to be told that I'm wrong by some of them. Cause I love being told I'm wrong by smart people cause I get to learn things. And nobody's jumping for the bait tonight, Deirdre. So I'm going to let you have the, any final thoughts and last things you want to share before the big day on Thursday?
I guess the only other thing that the only thing I want to share is that I'm actually slightly prepared for an upset after putting everything together from this last week. I started to think just maybe there could be an upset. So that okay. would be, but I see I do see that somebody put,
we do. We do have a speaker who's tapping in. What's going on, CJ?
Hi, Nate. It's Carlos.
How's
here.
How's it going, man? I know. I just wanted to say CJ because it was your Twitter handle.
Yeah, that's just so I don't get fired from my Twitter. nothing. Because Deirdre, you talked about how you see Brian Jean coming from behind. Somebody who we haven't talked about lately. The man who got the 50-something caucus endorsements, Mr. Taves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a friend refers to him, Travis T. I don't know that Taves is going to manage the runoff that he needs, because I think it's going to go 5 ballots, and I think that Taves would need to see 6. Wait, 6? No. Yeah, 6.
6.
I mean, theoretically, it could go to 7, but that would be a disaster.
Yeah. And the thing is, like there's so much dependent on this. I did that one with Stephen Carter and spreadsheets. And, you know, as much as we tried to give more, more votes being run off to Taves, we couldn't do it. Like, no matter how hard we tried, it didn't seem that he was going to be able to make up the votes. And it's because of the fact that there's 7 people in the race and 4 of them are probably going to be under 6,000 or 7,000 votes. They just don't have enough to push over. So Smith, of course, has almost no runoff coming until Lowen, and I don't expect him to have a lot anyways. But, you know, you've got to look at Brian Jean. Where would his go? And I think that they would side more to Daniel Smith just because the majority of the UCP memberships are in rural right now, and they're Wild Rose fans. Which is, again, why I can suddenly see maybe Brian Jean would get more support. Now, Taves is also rural, but he's not old Wild Rose. And that's what this fight is about. Like, this leadership race is because Jason Kenney merged the parties. Lots of people didn't like Jason Kenney, but he ousted he got rid of former Wild Rose, people that had run third-party advertiser for him, people that organized Wild Rose for years. Kenny snubbed them all. So this is a movement, and I'm pretty sure a very high Wild Rose movement that has come into this take Alberta back sort of attitude.
It's going to be interesting. Like, Taves, to me, he's very much the established candidate. Yeah. But the problem that I keep coming back with to Taves is he's like, to me, a slightly less creepy version of Andrew Scheer that won't survive
Fair enough.
an election that he doesn't dominate. Like if the UCP elect Taves as leader, then I think we're going to see very much the same kind of policies that we've seen from Dean Kenney. I think that'll be status quo. And I think that's not enough. I think that'll probably alienate a bunch of the Take Back Alberta folks you were just talking about there, Deirdre. And what'll end up happening is a bunch of the more extreme views will stay home in May of 23. And the UCP will either not get government or they'll get a tiny little government. And the net result will be another leadership race. And I mean, that seems to be, as you were pointing out earlier, that seems to be the ethos of the party now. Mm-hmm. And I really do like, there's nothing compelling about Taves. What is there to get excited about with Taves? Like that one time he had presumably cow poo on his shirt, but that's but about
can I,
it.
Can I speak on that one sec?
Yeah.
So you said exactly what's there exciting about Taves? Nothing. And that's why I think he might be, you know, the quietly coming up, especially if for those, I will admit, I did not get it. I just couldn't pay the $10. I'm sorry, Nate. I just couldn't. I can't. But that's, you know, those Rick McIver style, those Richard Godfrey's, you know, people who I don't like, but I can respect, you know, who can just be like, you know what, Travis Taves may have the personality of a cup of water in an earthquake. So that might be why I vote for him. Well, not me, but if I had a UCP membership, you know.
And I mean, he's comforting in that warm glass of 2% milk before bedtime kind of way. Maybe this will put me to sleep tonight, but that's about where it starts and stops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, and that's, I think, why, like, that's why I couldn't see. So I saw Taves receiving, you know, at least as much as the ones that voted to keep Kenney. So, 34,000 people voted in the first one. So I saw Taves coming in easily with about 20 to 25,000 votes from the original people that voted on the leadership review, but they have now been dwarfed. That number has been like 34,000 people voted. They had approximately 50,000 members at the time, they said, and now they have 123,000. So because the numbers have changed so much, I don't think that actually speaks well for Taves, especially since the membership did not rise the way it should have in places like Calgary. That's where they really needed to see the numbers come up. And it didn't. Over 60% of the membership is still rural.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the biggest problem is. And are they going to vote for status quo? No. They're old wild rosers who got screwed over in the unification process, and they know it. That's the thing. These people all know that they it's not a
yeah.
So that's why I'm really leaning towards the wild rosers, even though I had Taves with some, you know, with a kind of some strong numbers up front, but I don't think they lasted.
But Lynn.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
How are you doing tonight, Lynn?
I'm okay. So first of all, there's no one creepier than Andrew Scheer.
That's why I said a less creepier version.
Okay, less creepier version. I disagree. They're about the same. But anyway, back to Alberta. You guys know that I am a Brian Jean constituent who would be horrified if he won. But what are my options at this moment? I'm actually cheering for the idiot.
Right?
Because I am frightened to death of Danielle Smith. And at least I think I could have some influence on Brian in Fort McMurray. I have nothing towards Danielle Smith. So I think that some of the stuff that Brian put out was poorly done and maybe, I'm hoping, wasn't with his permission. But at this point, I really think that Deidre's right, that there is a chance that he could win.
It'll be fascinating. I know I'm really looking forward. I've already started writing jokes.
I'm not looking forward to anything.
Oh, I'm looking forward to Thursday, because I think that, you know, no matter what happens, it's going to be earth shattering. Like there's nobody who comes out of this leadership race and you either don't go, well, yeah, I kind of expected that and we're screwed, or wait, how did that person win? No matter what, it's going to be strap in, everybody. It's about to get bumpy.
Yeah. But you know what? If Daniel Smith doesn't win, great.
Like, we've already voted.
There's no option now until, actually there is an option. You can probably find the candidate or nominee in your riding with the party that you would prefer and start finding out what help they need. Do they need somebody on the doors? Do they need somebody making phone calls? That's what starts right after this, because as soon as the next premier is actually sworn in, so we figured it'd be Tuesday, as soon as the next premier is sworn in, it's election campaigning. Okay. That is it. It's full on election campaigning from now until June.
What you're saying is the person I actually voted for, I can get behind on Friday.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, like, Georgia, you took the words right out of my mouth, because one of the things that I've been, and I know you've been trying to say, I'm not trying to take all the credit or thunder or anything, but the biggest upset in this leadership race is the fact that Danielle Smith was able to tap into a group of people who over the last 3 years of pandemic have gotten really engaged. They've gotten really organized, and she was able to, through her rhetoric, bring them over to her side early. Right. And it speaks to the importance of being engaged. And I couldn't agree with you more, Deirdre. If there's, you know, once the wheels hit the ground on Thursday, they say 5, so it'll probably be like 7:30. But right. Once the wheels hit the ground there, then it's time to figure out if this person who is now the leader of the UCP is not the one that you wanted to see, and they're not the one that you want to see running the province, then you got to go find the party and the people that you believe are. But I also think, and I played on this drum a bit too, you gotta hold them to account.
Mm-hmm. Because I have a question, because you guys are much smarter than me.
Oh God, no, so go ahead.
Obviously, I'm a UCP member until November, and I told them I was going to cancel it after that. So here's my conundrum. My husband and I are not on the same page provincially or federally because of what my husband says Rachel Notley did to Fort McMurray in the 4 lousy years she was in power. Mm-hmm. Versus the 30-some that the UCP was in power. But anyway, we're not on the same page. So my conundrum right now is, do I stay a member of the UCP and vote and work for the person I think would be better? Or do I switch my party as to what I was when I was in my 20s? How do I make that decision?
You know, I think you just have to look at your candidates, what options you actually have, and go with whatever you're most comfortable with. Because, I mean,
but in Fort McMurray, Deidre, we are not going to have an NDP candidate that will win.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, Strathmore, Chestermere. I fully understand what that position is like. And if you can find someone who's going to contest the nomination, or if you can find someone, so where are you, Tanny Al? Are you in Tanny's?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you can, if you can support him or if you support a challenger, then, you know, do that. Because exactly, like in rural, we don't have really the options. And I know that some strong NDP supporters have gotten very upset when I say things like this, that, oh, well, no one else will be elected with that attitude. And it's like, do you know rural at all? Like,
yeah, if I was in Edmonton, it would be a totally different story.
Exactly. And yeah. So, you know, we have to do, like, we have to get involved where we can and with what we can. And we know that Leela here's nomination is going to be contested by a freedom warrior. And okay. So that's, you know, I guess that's my next step is, I guess, trying to help out. But at the same time, I don't really help out too much because...
So what you're saying to me is, even though I love Tanny dearly, because, I mean, my daughter grew up with him, but he's absolutely useless. So if I keep my UCP membership, I can still vote NDP in the end.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nobody knows what you're doing in the voting booth except for you.
Yeah.
No, you can do whatever you want. If you want to be involved in the party line, you will probably have to be a member.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay. But yeah, no, you're like your vote is your own at the end of the day. I mean, you can work your butt off for somebody else and then vote for someone completely different because it just didn't work out.
But what you're saying is, being a UCP member, I can also work for the person that I think should be premier over the nut job.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
I get what you're saying.
And to be clear as well, and I mean, one of the things that we hear from provincial parties, especially this week, the NDP with their kabajillion mailouts, is donations speak. And if you donate to, just because you live in Fort Mac, doesn't mean that you can't donate to a candidate that you like in another area.
Okay.
There's lots of different ways to provide support. And I think the more creative that we get, I mean, we've seen the Freedom folks, they're willing to drive. They're willing to show up on online stuff. They're willing to have conversations about things that aren't anywhere near the areas that they live in. So I just think we need to bring some of that same passion to the table.
Yeah.
Well, that you guys have answered so many questions tonight. That's excellent.
Perfect. I'm going to throw it over to Caden then, because he's been waiting super patiently. And we have a list tonight. Keith and Tammy, we're going to get to you next. But Caden, what's going on tonight?
Hey guys, I've got a comment about the UCP leadership race and then a question for you. So I think that Daniel Smith, we're going to see a similar situation to the federal leadership race with the conservatives there. I think Daniel Smith is going to outperform the polling. But my question regarding the general election or snap election, I'm of two minds on this. I don't know. Do you think Daniel Smith is going to get more popular the longer she's premier? I don't believe that is the case. I think she's going to get less popular. So I think it'd be in their best interest to have an election this before Christmas, honestly. But you know, at the same time, I share the fears that, you know, far-right populism is appealing to some people, and that there is a potential that kind of rhetoric becomes more popular for the general electorate. Yeah. So my question is then, do you think that Daniel Smith is going to get more popular as she goes on to her term as premier?
I don't think she's going to get more popular. I think that, I mean, one of the things that we're starting to see, and I'll go to the GoFundMe debacle. Daniel Smith likes to make things up as she goes. And Daniel Smith, it seems like, likes to fancy herself as being the loophole finder. And what that adds up to is a whole bunch of very bad decisions, of very reflexive decisions, and a whole bunch of comments that are very, very damaging. And I think that what we're going to see, I mean, I've been watching the other political parties throughout this whole process, and there's a few, like the NDP did take a couple of the T-ball of the Alberta Sovereignty Act, But for the most part, the other provincial parties have stayed relatively quiet. And I think it's because they're wanting to save some of the narrative for when they're going to get the most mileage out of it. So I would not be at all surprised if Danielle Smith gets elected. And as much as she would like to spend 6 months campaigning free of having to appear in the legislature, I think that what's probably going to happen is that if she does call a snap, then we're going to see all of these stories, all of these bits and pieces start to come out and be repeated more and more and more and more and more. And I think that she's not going to be able to deliver in the 6 months the promises that she's made to the people who have got her to the dance so far. And if those promises don't get kept, I mean, we're back to the revolving door. Deirdre, what do you think?
It's hit and miss. So Danielle Smith has the capacity to be a compassionate individual, to be a reasonable individual. When she first started with 770 CHQR, she, you know, I listened reluctantly, but it was because my mom listened to her every day and I was like, fine, I will check it out. And I actually found that I did not despise her. And
that's high praise.
Right? I found that sometimes, you know, she was, I didn't hate her takes. Now that Danielle Smith completely disappeared during the pandemic. Now, I don't know if she still has the capacity to reach in and find that person again, because if she does, then there is a possibility that she could actually start to instill some trust in a place like Calgary. And that's like, it's widely believed that's the election battleground, right? Edmonton is the NDP's, rural belongs to the UCP. Calgary is the battleground. So what happens with them? That's where she needs to gain support or at least trust. And that's the thing. I'm not sure if she actually has the capacity to go back to that person. And that to me will make all of the difference. It depends on how confident she really is in what she's saying right now. And I think she's pretty confident. She's been saying it for 2 years.
And she hasn't backed down from any of it either. But nope. We're talking about rural Alberta and whether or not it belongs to the UCP. And I know that person in the queue is going to have some thoughts on that. Keith, what's going on tonight?
Oh, so many thoughts. Trying not to use my voice that we'd use in the kitchen in the 80s and all of the words that are associated with it. As everybody most likely knows, I am a goofball that is stuck in Danielle Smith's writing. She has pre-campaigned with multiple visits to different community organizations as a speaker. It's quite a challenge at this point to see somebody that openly went to the current sitting MLA and basically said, I'm going to take over your party and most likely take your seat, and not be concerned that that person has capacity to be compassionate on a long-term basis for the entirety of a province. That's where it kind of hurts my heart, Deirdre, is it as some myself, I can consider myself to be a community leader in respects. I sit on a town council. I'm involved with multiple organizations within a community, and to know that we take this slippery slope backwards into a very selfish look of of what I need versus what the province needs as a whole is a heck of a place for a community leader to build their platform on. And now we're in this position where you used to have the pride of Alberta being a mindset of the 1988 Olympics, where everybody pulled off an Olympics for profit, basically doing things together and making things happen, to worrying about why I deserve another ATV or a boat because I work hard. The shift from our leaders are putting us in this position, and we need to have some leaders that are back in that mindset that says we can all get along together and we can all work to move forward and benefit with each other. Miss Smith scares the hell out of me. I trust her about as far as I can throw her, and I've had 6 back operations and 2 new discs put in, so I can barely lift her off the damn ground. From that, I'm going to stop rambling.
All right. Well, thanks for those thoughts, Keith. And I think that, you know, you're certainly not the only one who has expressed concerns that the tone of the leadership that we're seeing from political leaders has definitely shifted. But we got Tammy in the queue, so I want to see what Tammy has to add to this.
You're still on mute, Tammy.
There we go. Oh. There we go. Took me a second. So I will, as a sort of take my words with a ton of salt or whatever, sorry. But I'm an NDP supporter. I vote NDP, have since I started basically going for elections. But my eldest daughter's family, my ex's family, they are UCP. Well, they're conservatives. Let's just say whatever the Conservative Party of choice is, that is who they have voted for. Mm-hmm. My fear is that with Danielle Smith, there's a chance that some people will go, okay, she's too crazy even for us. If Brian Jean gets in, at least on that side of the family, he is their candidate of choice. If he gets in rather than Danielle Smith, there is absolutely no chance in 6 months that the NDP takes it. Not that there's a huge chance anyway, but there's more of a chance if Danielle Smith's in charge and can screw things up really badly than if Brian Jean, because that side of the family, that group, they always felt that Kenny screwed Brian Jean. Mm-hmm. So that their view of him leaving, if Brian Jean gets in, as far as they're concerned, he's the one that should have been in charge to begin with. And he'll get a whole lot more buy-in with just 6 months, just based on the fact of, well, you know, Kenny screwed him. So this is the person that should have been the leader all along. So he'll get in at least another 4 years. Whereas I think Danielle has more of a chance of, well, she's the one, they will remember quickly how she screwed people. Mm-hmm. If she's only got 6 months and she screws it up even more, they'll remember that she screwed up before.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the NDP are hoping for a Danielle Smith victory, because she is, like, I mean, really, it's it's dissonant for me to watch the NDP supporters say, you know, I really hope that Danielle, and this isn't a criticism, Tammy, it's just an observation. I've heard from a lot of NDP supporters that they really want to see Danielle Smith because she's the worst possible scenario. And there's a part of me that kind of goes, isn't that kind of like lighting the house on fire so you can call the fire department? Like, I'd prefer if the house didn't burn myself. But the reality is that we're faced with the front runners in this leadership race. At least the house is going to burn. It's just a question of how fast. And I think that you're probably right there.
Yeah. Well, I'm disabled. And call it a really weird thing. I'm a lucky disabled person. I had two strokes and cancer. And that is what stopped me from working for 2.5 years. And I've managed to fight my way back to the point where I'm actually maybe a little bit better than I was when I had my strokes. So I'm in a really good position right now. I make a good wage. I work from home 100% of the time. You know, for me, I don't worry about COVID. I don't worry about those things. I go from my bedroom, I get dressed in the morning, and I go to my office and literally walk down the hall. But I made friends in the disabled community when I wasn't working, when I was having more issues with speaking. And if you noticed, I was trying to come up with words. When I start getting stressed or nervous, that's what happens. So that's kind of the remnants of stroke. I used to be the kind of person who came into a business meeting and silver tongue devil, I just go talk and whatever. So it was a real harsh fall to go from that to, after my strokes, having so much trouble talking to people. But I now know the disabled community fairly well, and it scares the crap out of me. The UCP getting in again, because as much as there's people of, you know, the different people that are running for the leadership going, oh, well, you know, we're going to reindex age and we're going to do this, we're going to do that, as promises to get into power. Kenny made all kinds of promises when he was running. So you can't believe the promises they make. So I'm watching that I've, you know, embraced, because I was part of, I am still technically part of it. I'm just one of the lucky ones who got out and now have a regular job and make a decent wage and, you know, all of that. But I watch these people struggle day to day, and it burns my butt that the UCP doesn't give a crap about them at all. Not a single crap. They care about nobody but big business and big oil and making sure their buddies get money. That's it. That's all they care about.
Well, Tammy, I want to thank you for tapping in tonight and for sharing your thoughts. And, you know, I'm going to go back to the same well that I went back to earlier. It's the engagement piece that is so, so critical. And one thing that I will say for the disabled community is, if there's a group of people that are resilient as all hell and that continue to fight for not only themselves, but the people that they see being affected by these political decisions, man, I would not want to be on the angry side of the disabled community, because the passion and the advocacy that exists there is absolutely inspiring. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts tonight.
No problem. You have a great night.
Thank you. You too. We got one more, and then I'm going to shut it down because I'm running out of firewood out here. Two shots. What's going on tonight? Maybe not. Oh, there we go.
Oh, you kept muting me. I didn't realize what I was doing.
What's going on today, my friend?
Just a weird view, I guess, for you guys. Someone who's worked in the oil field my whole life. Where would I go for proper education on how to clue people I work with in without getting in a fist fight? It kills me. There's the F. Trudeau, the this, the that. I'm like, do you have a clue what's going on in your provincial government?
I mean, I don't think there's a formalized education program for that. I wish there was. But, I mean, what I'll tell you is one of the things that I like to do is I like to ask why. And then I typically like to follow that up when somebody says, you know, well, Trudeau's part of the WEF plan to make us all eat bugs and have microchips or whatever. I'll say, okay, can you send me that article? Can you send me that link? Because that's different than what I understand. And if I'm missing something, then I'd like to know. I think more often than not, unfortunately, what's happening with a lot of people is there are a lot of organizations that are very disingenuous about what their goals are. I mean, here at The Breakdown, we're very clear. We're not journalists. We're trying to have conversations.
Yeah,
we're
trying you're to not encourage Canada proud.
You know, we could talk about True North. We could talk about, there's lots of media organizations that present themselves as being journalists or operating without bias when the complete opposite is true. And there's not a whole lot of effective education out there for people to be able to discern, hey, I think this guy might just be talking because he likes to hear his own voice, or I think this guy might be trying to advance a political agenda, or any of those things. And so
his name is Pierre.
Yeah. Well, but it's those asking those questions, because I think that at the core of all of the frustration that we see, there's a lot of people who simply don't feel like they're being heard. And I think that there's a lot of people who feel very frustrated and very tired. And again, I've said this many times on the show. I think that there's a lot of people who are, you know, human beings, as a general rule, look at complex situations and want simple solutions. And the reality is, it, especially with complex situations, it never works that way. It's very, very difficult to for anyone to wrap their heads around the pandemic, the scope and magnitude of it, and the failures that we saw across all levels of government and administration. So it's much easier to just go, Klaus Schwab, because that's simpler. I don't have to think that hard about that. And that person who's on the internet told me that it's Klaus Schwab's fault, and that the Justin Trudeau is building a giant new military environmental complex in Winnipeg. So I'll drink that Kool-Aid all day long. But it has to start the conversations and the asking why, I think. I don't know.
It's frustrating.
Oh, I hear that.
Yeah. And I think everything you see, everything you hear, and it's always your basic social media. And the worst, I think, lately is everyone sending me TikToks like, come on.
Well, the one thing that I would suggest, number one, is probably to have the conversation one-on-one rather than a group, because you will get shouted down easily enough. But the other thing, I guess, what I started to do was I was reading everything that they were reading, right? I read the same articles that a lot of people that unfortunately are listening to a lot of misinformation. I do read that stuff. I know it's crap, but I do it because I want to know exactly what they've read. So then I can come back with an argument against something that they have already read. Right. So you do unfortunately have to keep up with the sort of things that they're sending. But, you know, I agree with Nate, like, you ask why, and then the things that you might want to have on hand are things like, You know, explain how tax cuts would have helped you when you were not working during the pandemic. How would that have helped you instead of CERB? And just try, like, you're going to have to get a fair amount of information into you so that you can have those conversations. But
fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, it can be done. But you know what? Those TikToks, annoying as they are, you're probably going to have to watch a few, because you need to know what that mindset is. The person that you're talking to that send that, you're going to have to look at it. Now, I do know as well from talking to some people that the pandemic sent a bunch of people over the edge and they're not coming back.
Yeah.
So that is an unfortunate thing that you need to maybe be open to, so that you don't make yourself crazy trying to have that conversation with someone who cannot come back from it.
Well, I hate to say that, but Hillary said it right, the deplorables.
I know.
I personally don't like the term the deplorable, and I say this only because, you know, I look at the people who got pushed over the edge by the pandemic and the confluence of factors that predisposed them to that. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that I take out of that, it's, okay, well, we can see all the different vulnerabilities that allowed that person to get pushed to a point of no return. And while I'm not going to spend all day, every day trying to argue with someone or debate or exchange ideas or who is so completely entrenched that they're not open to new conversations, what I am going to do is I'm going to try to learn from, like I said, what are the factors that got them there, so maybe that we can prevent future generations from falling down those same rabbit holes. And I think that that's one of the values, another one of the values of having those conversations, because you can see the frustration and you can see the despair. And I mean, I pity economists like Dr. Trevor Toome, who on a weekly basis has to try to re-explain the realities of equalization, because that program is so completely misunderstood by so many people, but he keeps doing it. And it's one of those things where I think if we had that conversation with people, then it would become less of a flashpoint for anger and frustration. But it's a really good question. And honestly, man, if you get any results out of those conversations, please share what worked, because I'd love to know.
I lived in small town Alberta. I've yet to figure out an answer.
Well, nobody invented the light bulb till the light bulb was invented. I still persist in hope. But thank you so much for tapping in and sharing your thoughts tonight, man.
Thanks, sir.
All right, Deirdre, I'm going to wrap it up because I can't feel my toes. I want to say a big, again, thank you to everybody who participated tonight. A big thank you to everybody who's listening to the podcast version of this, which will probably come out on Monday because I'm running out of battery and internet out here in the middle of where I am. But yeah, I just want to, again, I mean, I know that the last week was a very intense episode. And I am not going to go down that road anytime soon again, because I don't think anybody wants me to. But I do want to say once again, for me and from all of the people who are being affected by the very bad thing, thank you so much for all of your support, whether it's through the GoFundMe, whether it's through Patreon, or whether it's just through the unbelievable avalanche of kind and supportive messages that both the breakdown and I personally received. It means the absolute world. That legal battle isn't going away anytime soon. So if you want to continue to support it, the GoFundMe, that's great. If you want to get early access to our interview episodes, and we've got two corkers coming up, we're crossing, fingers crossed, another political party leader off the Tiki Box list later this week. We're going to be having I'm hoping a very fascinating conversation about some supports that are being cut for pregnant teenage mothers. We're getting back into everything, and early access to all of those things comes with our Patreon. So if you want to sign up to be one of our Patreon supporters at www.patreon.com facebook.com/thebreakdown. That would be delightful too. And if you can't do either of those things, totally understand. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, keep the conversation going.